communities. For all of us working to create a healthier future for our communities and for the world you live in.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Terry. On today's show, host Dave Mitchell will interview volunteers Bridget Sanderson and Solly Flora of Climate Action KC. They will discuss its role in the development of a regional climate action plan with the Mid-America Regional Council and other Climate Action KC activities. Stay tuned. But first, the environmental news for the week of May 25th. Democracy Now! Reports, Michigan is facing a potential environmental disaster as floodwaters from two breached dams threaten the headquarters of Dow Chemical and nearby Superfund toxic cleanup sites. The crisis in Michigan began on May 19, when a pair of dams broke after 2 days of heavy rain. A cyclone has battered East India and Bangladesh, killing at least 22 people, destroying thousands of homes, and leaving millions without power. It's the strongest cyclone to hit the region in over two decades. The University of California announced it has completely divested its portfolio from all fossil fuel companies. The move makes University of California the largest university system in the United States to meet a core demand of activists fighting the climate crisis. In climate news, atmospheric carbon dioxide levels have reached their highest level in human history and continue to climb, despite a modest decrease in carbon emissions due to the pandemic. With huge swaths of the world economy on lockdown, global emissions are expected to decline this year by a record 8%. But climate scientists say that's not nearly enough to flatten the so-called Keeling curve of carbon dioxide levels, now at about 415 parts per million. 2020 is on track to be the hottest year ever recorded, beating out 2016. Environmental Working Group reports, this week they released their 14th annual guide to sunscreens. They reviewed 1,300 SPF products and found only 25% offer adequate protection and do not contain worrisome ingredients, such as oxybenzo, a potential hormone-disrupting chemical that is readily absorbed by the body. Cosmetic giant Johnson & Johnson announced it will soon end the sale of talc-based baby powders in the U.S. and Canada. Talc and asbestos can form in the same parent rock, so cosmetics made with talc can be contaminated with the deadly carcinogen, which was responsible for the death of thousands of Americans every year. According to the Environmental Working Group survey, Michigan is home to more PFAS contamination sites than any other state in the U.S. These chemicals, called per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, have been detected in water supplies across the country and in our bodies. In fact, Environmental Working Group estimates that PFAS chemicals are detectable in all major U.S. water supplies. Truth Out wrestles with how to live in the face of climate catastrophe. They write that the root of the climate crisis is that we have become disconnected from the earth. The first step, then, before we attempt any solutions, is to reconnect, for we cannot begin to walk until our feet are on the ground. Growing vegetables is one way to choose to connect, as it provides not only food, but helps foster a relationship with the earth and with our human community. Now, our show.
Welcome, everybody, to Eco Radio. This is Dave Bennett Freeling, and I'm happy to welcome a new co-host to our team here. We got Dave Mitchell, who works with Radioactive Magazine, and he's also a longtime environmental activist in KC. Welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. I think I can remember your name. So,
nice and easy. Plenty of Daves out there.
Plenty of Daves out there, right?
Yeah. So, tell us what we're going to be doing today on the
air. we're going to be talking with Solly Flora and Bridget Sanderson about activities surrounding Climate Action KC and their, including their work currently on a climate action plan for KC. So.
Excellent. And we've got them on the line. Are we ready to dive into that? Or you got
I think so. Let me do a little introduction for them, and we'll get started. Yeah, as I said, we're speaking with Solly Flora and Bridget Sanderson. They are co-chairs of the Policy Committee of Climate Action KC, an organization that was founded 1.5 years ago by Lindsay Constance, Shawnee City Councilwoman, and Mike Kelly, Mayor of Roland Park. Both Lindsay and Mike were galvanized into action by the October 2018 UN report, which indicated that humanity must reduce CO2 emissions 45% by 2030 in order to limit global warming, warming of our climate to 1.5 degrees centigrade or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. Climate Action KC is a regional organization comprised of a wide variety of local leaders, stakeholders, and professionals whose ultimate goal is the positioning of our metro region as a resilient climate leader. CAKC's accomplishments in their brief history include sponsoring the September 2019 Climate Action Summit at Johnson County Community College, publishing the Climate Action Playbook for local leaders in December 2019, and along with the Mid-America Regional Council, partnering with the Global Covenant of Mayors on a pilot project to develop a regional climate action plan. CAKC's highest priority and the thing that they're working on most strongly right now. Ms. Flora is an in-house attorney with a company in Lenexa and is serving her first term as a Mission Kansas councilwoman. She has been with CAKC from nearly its inception, is chair of the advisory committee and co-chair of the policy committee. She is active in the animal rescue community and is on the board of directors of Safe House. Ms. Sanderson has been the director of Environment Missouri since 2019 and was a soil scientist for 8 years with the Kansas Geological Survey. She provides assistance to the Heartland Conservation Alliance Policy Workgroup and Youth Council alongside Missouri's Clean Energy Coalition and conducts a weekly webinar, Conservation Conversations. She has also been involved with CAKC since nearly its beginning and is co-chair of the Policy Committee. I note that I am an attendee of the Policy Committee representing Citizens Climate Lobby, Kansas City. Solly and Bridget, welcome to this week's edition of Echo Radio.
Hello, can you hear us?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you answered. I'm glad someone was there. So you both can hear me fine.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Great. Let's start with I did want to start with before we get talking about Climate Action KC. I kind of wanted to just ask each of you what motivated you to become involved with the environmental movement. And how did you come to your roles with Climate Action Kansas City? Solly, we can start with you first. And then.
Okay, sure. I've always been interested in environmental issues. The whole time I was growing up, my dad worked for EPA here in Kansas City. But for a lot of my life, it was largely a passive interest. But then a couple years ago, prior to my election to city council, I got involved with Missions Sustainability Commission and was a member of that and started learning more about what we could do at the local level to help fight climate change. And so then I got involved with Climate Action KC because I was friends with Mike and Lindsay, the founders, and so kind of got in at the beginning stages and now co-chair of policy with Bridget and chair of the advisory committee, which is our committee that sort of brings together all of the other committees to make sure that they're communicating effectively with one another and then reports up to the executive board.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about who's on the advisory committee? Or the advisory board or advisory committee?
So it's a little confusing. So there's an executive board, which is the official board of the organization now that it's an incorporated nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so that they make, file decisions, handle the money, can speak in the name of the organization, et cetera. And then the advisory committee is supposed to serve an advisory role to the board, and our membership is made up of sort of key local leaders and specifically includes the chair of the other standing committees of Climate Action KC, you know, to make sure everyone's working well together and sort of knows what all the various parts are doing.
Right, right. Bridget, how about yourself? How did you become involved with the issue of global warming, and how did you come to be connected with Climate Action KC?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, by the way, for having us on.
You're welcome.
You guys. So mine actually probably started when I was about in the second grade, if I remember correctly. We were able to take a field trip out to help local scientists tag monarch butterflies for their trip south. And that, like, early hands-on education made me just kind of fall in love with the Earth and the Earth processes. And, of course, the scientists taught us about how important monarch butterflies are as a pollinator. And there was just monarchs for the eyes to see. My, like, little second-grade brain just couldn't take in how many monarch butterflies there were. And so from there, you know, I got a degree in geology, where a vast majority of the learning I had was is also in the form of field trips to national and state parks and public lands. So, you know, with all of that kind of made me realize, you know, we really needed to protect these really crucial places from, you know, the abundant lifestyles that we're currently living in. And so when Climate Action KC popped up in, you know, 2018, I immediately wanted to jump in and get my hands dirty and join in any way possible. And quite honestly, my friendship with Solly was one of the ways I was able to get in pretty early on.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then, you know, also I've always loved policy. So when she asked what committees I would want to be on, I jumped on a policy committee. And then in 2020, Solly asked if I would help her be a co-chair.
Oh, okay. Well, that's those are very interesting histories there. You know, I know that when I was young, which was quite a period of time before you guys, you know, monarch butterflies were, I mean, annually they were common. You know, they were common occurrences when I was young. So
same here. I, you know, like in you know, I'm not quite as old as you, Dave, but you know, it hasn't been that long since I was in second grade, and it's just kind of amazing how few monarch butterflies we see now.
Yeah, there's been a crash in population, that's for sure, among a variety of other species. But you know, the Climate Action KC is a really a wide variety of community leaders, stakeholders, and professionals connected with them. Do you guys want to talk about highlight some of the local leaders in the area that are connected with Climate Action KC?
Sure. So just for a little bit of background, I think you mentioned already, and we discussed as well, so the organization was co-founded by Lindsay Constance, who's a Shawnee City Council member, and Mike Kelly, who's the mayor of Roland Park, in 2018.
Right.
And now there are more than 100 local and state elected officials who have signed on as, we call it climate leaders, or
right,
supporters of the organization. And then we also have many nonprofit and other organizations that we partner with. So some of those that you might be familiar with are MARC, or the Mid-America Regional Council, Climate Energy Project, USGBC, Bridging the Gap, Cultivate KC, BNIM, which is an architecture firm, NRDC, and the Shawnee Mission School District, just to name a few. The executive board. Lindsay is the president, and Mike is chair of the board, and then that group is made up of elected officials from both sides of the state line, as well as some other individuals. And then there are seven standing committees for the organization, which are advisory and policy that we've mentioned, the Climate Action Plan Committee, Equity Summit, Engagement, and Youth. And then for a couple of personal profiles, I think both Bridget and I came up with someone we'd like to highlight. So I would like to highlight one rock star member that we have is Melissa Cheatham, who is a resident of Overland Park and is involved with their environmental group there, and she really led the way last year in the development of our climate action playbook that I think we'll be talking about a little more later on here. And so she chaired the subcommittee on that and spent countless hours getting that put together for us.
I would like to highlight Michael Kelly, actually, with Bike Walk KC. He is on, you know, both our policy advisory committees. Mike has, you know, been working tirelessly in Kansas City to help the city council pass resolutions for the city's bike plan, complete streets, and just recently, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, Vision Zero, among many other talents that he's done. And, you know, his just knowledge for transportation issues, I think, is a huge asset, you know, to Climate Action KC and as well as Environment Missouri.
Right, right. Yeah, I was, there really is a really wide cross-section of leaders from various sectors. You know, I know on I was looking at the website today, and in terms of partners, there was the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. I was fairly surprised about that. Evergy, I believe, is a partner. There's different environmental groups, including the Sierra Club, Citizens Climate Lobby, and some very, you know, who's who of local leaders on both sides of the state line, including Mayor Quentin Lucas and former Mayor. I'm having a slight age-related
Barnes?
Issue
Cleaver?
Here.
Neither Barnes nor Cleaver?
No.
Sly James has been involved.
Sly James.
Oh, there
James,
you
go.
Of
okay.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
That's embarrassing. Okay. It's going to happen to you guys, too. I trust you.
Oh, yeah, trust definitely.
Me. Yeah. And okay. Well, after that embarrassing moment, are we going to take a quick break here?
Yeah, we're just going to take a quick little break. We'll hear more about the great work that y'all are doing with the council after this.
Great.
Let's explore, let's question, let's decolonize together on Ebony's Bones.
Tune in every Wednesday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
KKFI is here because of you. Thank you so much to our donors who support KKFI year in and year out. We know that right now is an extremely challenging time for a lot of people. We hope that we can pass on some information that helps and that we're playing some music that puts a smile on your feet. We are so grateful for those supporters who gave during the special Giving Tuesday Now campaign to encourage global giving. KKFI has raised over $4,000 so far with 42 donors making gifts, and special shout out to the 8 people who made their first gift to KKFI. Thank you all so much. If you'd like to join these kind and generous people, please call 888-931-0901 or go to kkfi.org. That's 888-931-0901 or go to kkfi.org.
All right, and we're back.
Okay, we're back here. We're talking with Sally Flora and Bridget Sanderson, who are co-chairs of the Climate Action KC Policy Committee. You know, Climate Action KC and the Mid-America Regional Council have formed a pilot partnership with the Global Covenant of Mayors and the International Urban Cooperation of the European Union to develop a climate action plan for the KC region. KC is one of 4 pilot partnerships in the U.S., sharing this distinction with Denver, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. regions. Climate Action KC and the Mid-America Regional Council will receive technical assistance from our regions for our region's climate action plan, beginning with an inventory of greenhouse gas emissions. Working on this plan is CAKC's highest priority. And so if you could, if each of you could just sort of tell us a little bit about what steps have been taken so far, and what remains to be done, and when you anticipate a completion date for the climate action plan. So Sally, you want to start first, and then.
Sure. So as you you mentioned, this is a pilot program, and the way in which it's a pilot is it's new for the Global Covenant of Mayors to be working with these regions instead of a particular city. So we're really happy to be in on the ground level of this. So far, the greenhouse gas inventory and the climate risk and vulnerability assessment have been completed. They can be viewed online if you go to climateactionkc.mindmixer.com and click on the important announcement at the top. And the primary takeaways of those stages are that energy, on-road transportation, and waste are the major contributors to greenhouse gas emissions in our area. So, for example, of total emissions, transportation, commercial buildings, and residential buildings are roughly equal contributors, which means there's a role for each of us to play in formulating solutions. And so our targets as a region that are coming out of this plan will be to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 27% by 2025, 40% by 2030, and 80% by 2050. And that's in line with the Paris Climate Agreement goals. And, you know, we expect to see the effects of climate change to get worse in our region before things get better. You know, we expect more intense rains as well as more intense drought and intense heat with greater negative impacts on our vulnerable populations for flooding, heat, and drought. And so, Bridget, do you want to talk a little bit about the Mind Mixer and what we're doing going forward with the plan?
Yeah, can you hear me? I'm sorry, I keep putting myself on mute because my dog wants to get on this. So, you know, we are trying to approach this challenge as a community with all hands on deck. And, you know, we're really wanting to see that. We think that we will succeed. You know, Kansas City is a really caring and giving community with regional coordination across state lines, you know, strong local professional and technical services. For example, I learned recently that more engineers per capita, we have more engineers per capita than any other city. We also have a low cost of living and environmental quality. So we are wanting to build a hyper-local economy, and we are starting, you know, to see this basically within our food system, connecting farmers directly to consumers, and it also, of course, a greater interest in backyard farming. We want to build a circular economy that eliminates, you know, I was talking earlier about abundance, you know, eliminates the concept of waste and considers waste a resource, such as composted food, enriching gardens. So how we're trying to build that hyper, you know, local economy and, you know, community coordination, we're actually using Mind Mixer as an app to basically get community conversations going on the ground since we're all stuck at home right now. So again, if you go to climateactionkc.mindmixer.com, we can, you know, start that conversation.
Well, yeah, and Mind Mixer is it's being conducted over a 6-week period, and for each I think you're right, we're right in the middle of it right now, and I think this week's focus is on food and land. Is that correct, or is it?
That's correct. It's food and land, and if you go to the Mind Mixer site at the link we gave, that you'll see a wide range of topics to virtually discuss, tying into flooding, urban heat, composting, the local food system, carbon capture, and the idea is everyone can contribute online and share their views for a regenerative future, and there are sort of these, you know, larger topics given each week to focus the conversation.
Right. So when you get to the site, people just need to they can participate by Facebook, right, and also by email. And
That's correct.
And you just have to type in your email and create a password, and then you can participate. And I think the link is climateactionkc.mindmixer.com. So. Just and it's for anybody who wishes to participate in that process. And I think You know, one point I did want to kind of get back to was Solly mentioned, you know, the, Kansas City has been rated as the, I think it was the fourth national climate assessment. I'm not entirely certain, but one of those, I think they're the ones that evaluated the Kansas City region as the fifth most impacted by the warming of our climate. And there was heat and drought, extreme precipitation events, and there was also a significant decrease in agricultural productivity from now through 2050. There was a definite issue there as well.
We're already seeing that, right, with the flood along the Missouri River last spring, and you know, they're already expecting all of that to come, you know, again and repeat itself this year as well.
Last year the Missouri delegation, the Missouri congressional delegation, had to seek out approval from the Trump administration to declare for two separate disaster declarations related to the flooding here in Missouri, as well as Nebraska and Iowa and the Dakotas, I believe. But just because we live here in the heartland does not mean that that we're going to escape severe consequences of our warming climate.
And I think that extreme heat, you know, is on the top of the list. I think we're going to see growth, and I'm not sure on the time frame on this, but a growth from 0.7 days on average above 105 degrees to an expected nearly 22 days a year that would be over 105 degrees. And as we mentioned, there's, you know, it'll have an impact on, you know, the urban core, on vulnerable populations, most significantly.
Right. Well, you know, and I think the other important point to consider here is a more general point of expectation, you know, is that, and this is sort of an issue with me, is that people need to realize that the climate is going to warm no matter what, and no matter what we do. The question is being able to bend the curve for a fairly appropriate phrase, actually, at this time. And you know, the climate system has like a lag in it, and you know, if we turned off all carbon emissions today, you know, the climate would still continue to warm, I believe, about 0.5 degrees, at least 0.5 degrees centigrade, I think. But anyway, just to set the expectation that we have a very long way to go, and I think what really impressed me so much about the formation of Climate Action KC was that it was Lindsay Constance and Mike Kelly who are their government officials that got freaked out basically by the UN climate report from October 2018. Mm-hmm. And you know, these weren't environmental groups meeting at some room in a church or something. You know, these were people who had, you know, some degree of influence, and the amount of action the amount of steps that they've taken to so far have been just extremely impressive. And you know, I think let's go on to. We did talk about the play. One of the impressive things that Climate Action KC did was the completion of the Climate Action Playbook, published in December 2019. But Dave is giving me the signal that we need to take a little bit of a break, and we'll come back to that issue very shortly. So.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
KKFI is proud to support the Youth Symphony of Kansas City, whose mission is to challenge, educate, and inspire students through musical experiences. Updated information on 2020 auditions, orchestras, and programs, and the status of performances is at youthsymphonykc.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During summer in central New York, residents often enjoy a refreshing dip in the region's peaceful lakes. But sometimes swimming is off limits because of algae blooms that can make people sick.
Some of the algae may produce chemical toxins that can have harmful effects on people, fish, shellfish, terrestrial and marine mammals, and birds.
Jennifer Graham is a research hydrologist with the United States Geological Survey. She says reports of harmful algal blooms are increasing across the country, and climate change could be part of the reason. Some harmful algae prefer warm temperatures, so blooms may be growing more common as rivers and lakes warm. Extreme weather can also contribute to algal blooms, because heavy rain can cause nutrients to run off farm fields and sewage systems into waterways.
Nutrients are basically the food source for algae.
In New York's Finger Lakes and other locations across the country, the USGS is monitoring algal blooms. Graham says they are trying to better understand toxic bloom growth and severity so local agencies can make informed decisions about how to protect people. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Yeah, okay, this is Dave Mitchell again talking with Solly Flora and Bridget Sanderson of Climate Action KC. We were just talking about their organization's accomplishments last year, which was the publishing of a Climate Action Playbook, published in December 2019, which outlined steps that local governments can take to reduce their carbon footprint. This book was based on Paul Hawkins' book Drawdown, and so basically, there was a lot of work that went into that. Melissa Cheatham, as Solly and Bridget indicated, was really spearheaded that effort, and I interviewed Melissa Cheatham on Radioactive Magazine sometime last year on her connection with CAKC and the playbook, but there were six major sectors identified: buildings and cities, electricity generation, food, land use, materials, and transportation. And Solly, I know that you were involved with in the creation of that playbook as well. For each of you, what steps can local governments take from that playbook that excited you the most? And Solly, we can start with you.
Sure. Well, one thing that with the vision of the playbook was that it could get the ball rolling before the climate action plan is fully developed, and so it's meant to operate as a menu of sorts, so that each local elected official, or it could work for businesses or other organizations as well, can look through and do exactly what you're asking of us, which is to take a look and see what interests you or what measures you'd like to undertake that you think might be a good fit for your city. So, for example, creating an electric vehicle fleet might have, a bigger impact in one city or another, depending on the vehicles you're using. But it might be in another city that planting trees is the way to go. So some of my favorite efforts are the efforts in the land use section, the section on trees, so efforts, to build up and promote our tree canopy, so the importance of planting and protecting our street trees and increasing trees in our cities, which one way you can do that is through through the Tree City USA Growth Award and seeking those goals. I also am interested in, under the transportation section, the walkable cities. So the measures we can take to build up walkable cities, which include things like the Complete Streets program, or, you know, promoting density and infill development so you have less sprawl and more areas that are walkable. And then lastly, I would say I'm interested in the food issues, you know, which are does tie into the climate action plan as well. And along those lines, both promoting composting, which is a solution in the playbook, and reducing food waste. And I think those are both two ways to really get the community involved. You know, it's not just the local elected officials focusing in on passing on something for just the city's own practices. You can be encouraging, you know, using education and encouraging your citizens to have buy-in as well. So those are some of the items that I'm excited about. I think they also perhaps have a lower entry point, you know, than some of the others. Like I mentioned, you know, if you're looking to replace all your vehicles with electric vehicles, that might seem like a, you know, an overwhelming task, but, you know, it's a lot easier for folks to get wrap their heads around, you know, what can we do? Can we put one new tree in this park, and how is that going to impact our tree canopy?
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I think people, trees are excuse me, trees are extremely important, and the more trees a community has, the better. You know, it will definitely be a much better community in a whole variety of ways, and it will definitely make a cooler city that is able to draw down quite a bit of carbon at the same time. And
yeah.
Bridget, what about yourself? What sections in the can you just tell us a few actions in the playbook that particularly excite you?
Yeah, of course. Actually, mine are hilariously very similar to Sally's, but just because of my background, you know, I'm typically more drawn to land use issues and conservation issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I work alongside Heartland Conservation Alliance and Deep Roots. So, of course, I lean more towards planting more native plants and shade trees. I would love for all of us to get rid of our, you know, turf grass yards that are they're not very sustainable. And then, of course, just a really nice hands-on activity is always eliminating invasive plants that harm our native plants because they have no competition, basically, specifically right. with bush honeysuckles.
Right.
Of course, the transportation portion also holds a soft spot in my heart. You know, I think one of the biggest hurdles that the Kansas City metropolitan area has is overcoming its sprawl. One of my favorite little facts that some transportation advocates love to say is that Kansas City actually had roughly the same population it does now in 1950, and we're actually spread out further and take up 5 times more land area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to have a truly sustainable metropolitan area in the Kansas City area, we need to, you know, build more compactly. So recommendations like complete streets, like Sally said, and walk-friendly community designations, I think, are super beneficial to build more compactly and encourages, you know, the metropolitan area, of course, to quit relying on dirty fossil fuel vehicles of the past and give us a better quality of life. Because then we can walk places.
Right, right. Well, and I think you know, part of that whole issue would be creating electric vehicle charging stations around the metro to assist people in transitioning to electric cars. So that would definitely be something to consider. And I think the as far as transportation goes, I know that Kansas City is we have the most highway miles per capita. Isn't that true?
Yes, in the metro? That is accurate.
And, yeah, that sounds right.
And how much from the transportation sector do we know the percent is pretty high in terms of our metro carbon footprint? Isn't that?
Yeah,
so that is one of the big items that the inventory identified. So roughly, transportation, commercial buildings, and residential buildings are the top among the top contributors, and they're roughly equal in their role.
And I think, is that about 30% apiece?
Yeah, just about.
I think that's right.
Buildings and cities and then transportation sector. And so the playbook that has been created by Climate Action KC, which is an initial effort, and there will definitely be more sophistication later. But it's a menu for local governments to be able to take what steps they can within their communities to reduce the footprint. And I really encourage people to become familiar with it, and for local governments to take a look at it as well. Climate Action KC also, they have legislative platforms for Kansas and Missouri, and the Kansas platform includes 100% renewable energy by 2030, establishment of an independent energy office, development of a statewide energy plan, expansion of the electrical vehicle charging infrastructure, and legislation incentivizing regenerative agriculture and carbon farming. And how does CAKC monitor the Kansas legislature, and has CAKC been able to advocate in Topeka for some of its issues recently? And whoever wants to talk on that can go.
Yeah, so our legislative platforms are a new effort this year. We didn't do them in the first year of the organization, but as you mentioned, we have one for Kansas and one for Missouri that are similar, that were developed in connection with our organizational partners, and then also partners that we have, you know, within both state houses, who have sort of their finger on the pulse of what's going on and where we might need to play, you know, defense as well as offense.
Right.
So the first idea with the platforms for this year, you know, they're available on our website. The idea was that we'd promote them to our membership and encourage them to share them out, and then they could be a starting point for conversations, you know, for just regular citizens who care about the environment, to use them as a starting point to talk to their elected officials about these issues. Now, we also do have partner organizations who help keep us informed about what's going on, you know, like the Climate Energy Project, Sierra Club, you know, several others, Bridget's organization on the Missouri side, who kept us keyed in to what was going on. Mm-hmm. And we did submit testimony on a few bills this year, but of course, on both sides, the session was cut short by the COVID-19 crisis, and so we weren't able to be as active as we hope to be in future years.
Right. Well, I know Zach Pastora. He's a young man with who's a lobbyist with the Sierra Club in Kansas, and I think he's connected with CAKC, and he's been providing some information.
Yeah, so he's one of those organizational partners I was referencing. Climate Energy Project has also been very active in helping keep us informed on the energy side, and the move for an independent energy office that unfortunately did not succeed this year, but hopefully we'll come back up again next year as well.
Right. So basically, essentially, the legislative platforms are position papers in essence with plans to continue to monitor the legislatures and advocate where possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
it's also kind of like a we kind of looked at it also as like a state level wide, you know, not formal policy playbook, but just something that we can bring to state legislators and just be like, hey, will you advocate for this or will you introduce this bill? And then of course we were able to kind of gleam off of those and oppose any bills that go against any of those platforms.
Right. Yeah, I was really for the Missouri legislative platform. I was pleased to see that you call also for creation of a statewide system of electric vehicle charging stations, the development of state guidelines for responsible wind energy, and repeal of legislation prohibiting banning of plastic bags by local ordinance, which I was very pleased to see. You know, I think the Missouri legislature passed a bill which negated, I think, Columbia, Missouri banned plastic bags, and then the legislature passed a bill negating that particular local ordinance. So I was glad to see that. And
yeah, and they were actually trying to extend that as well to include polystyrene or like to-go containers for restaurants as well. They were trying to make it so we couldn't, so municipal cities or counties can't put any type of fee or tax or ban on polystyrene as well.
Okay. Well, it, well, yeah, those polystyrene, I assume, is that another word for styrofoam?
Yes, it sure
okay.
is.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's definitely bad stuff. Let's go to, you know, a big event that Climate Action KC worked on last year was the September 2019 Climate Summit that was held at Johnson County Community College. And it was, the keynote speaker was Paul Hawken, the editor of the book Drawdown. And there were a high number of breakout sessions and with a wide variety of stakeholders. And there were several hundred in attendance. And I know that CAKC is working on a Climate Summit 2020. Solly, can you tell us kind of plans for that? I believe it's coming up in September of this year.
Yeah, so some sad news on this front. Due to the uncertainties surrounding the COVID-19 and the timelines that would have been necessary to lock in facilities and speakers and everything, there will not be a Climate Action Summit in September 2020 as initially planned.
No, it's that's
and that will be moving to summer of 2021 instead. Mm-hmm. But there will be a smaller event planned for September 2020 in connection with our regional Climate Action Plan and in partnership with the Global Covenant of Mayors with the three other regions that are participating in the pilot program that you mentioned, which are Chicago, Denver, and the Washington, D.C. metro areas. So there are some plans underway to have a smaller event that would have fewer people involved live and in person, but then we would have I think there's plans for a broadcast partner so that it will be both recorded so that all the regions, could share it and for their uses, and as well as people here on the ground. It would be, I think, both live streamed and recorded is the plan to sort of have a smaller event but keep people engaged that way.
Okay, well, that's nice to hear. So just to have people check the Climate Action KC website for details as that gets closer.
Yeah, the website and then social media accounts. So we're on both Facebook and Twitter as well. So okay. keep an eye on those spaces, and there should be more details about that regional event, and then more as we move further into the year about the plans for summer of 2021.
Okay. Okay, and just to double back on the Mind Mixer event going on right now, if people want to participate in that, again the link is climateactionkc.mindmixer.com, and you can be a part of it's part of that process of developing a regional climate action plan that Climate Action KC and the Mid-America Regional Council are working on. And so if you do have an interest in those areas, definitely get on that link and sign in and participate. I'm sure they would really appreciate that.
For sure. And I would say, don't feel like you have to be a subject matter expert or anything. What we're looking for is for a broad, cross-section of the community to participate so that everyone will be invested in the plan that is developed. And I think the Mind Mixer platform was specifically chosen because it can be accessed on a wide variety of sites. You know, it's just a web address, so you can log in from your phone or from your computer, whatever devices, you know, you have access to.
Okay. And, you know, everybody out there remember that it's a six-week window, and I think we're on our third week right now. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's correct. It will end the week of June 15th.
Oh, okay. All right. So,
the end of that week, yeah.
So there is a time limit on all that. So, okay. Well, you know, Sally and Bridget, you know, thanks so much for being on the show today, and we very much appreciate you talking about Climate Action KC. So,
yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. Well, thank you. And
every Tuesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m., Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced public affairs program, spotlights individuals and organizations in our community that deal with ideas and issues of social and political significance, such as climate change, racial and gender inequality, pay inequity, and much, much more. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesdays, 6 to 6:30 p.m., right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Here's the calendar of events for the week of May 25th. Native Gardening, a Deep Roots virtual series, will be Tuesday, May 26th at 4 p.m. Deep Roots will present a short live session with Patty Ragsdale of Happy Apples Farm, talking about her favorite native plants for sun. Presentations have interactive question and answers, and recordings will be available after. Register at Deep Roots KC. Also on Tuesday, May 26th, 6:30 p.m., Indie Lens Pop-Up, Eating Up Easter, a screening of the 2018 documentary that turns a spotlight on Easter Island and its struggle to balance growth and sustainability. RSVP at kclibrary.org. On Wednesday, May 27th, 4 p.m., the Missouri Prairie Foundation invites you to register for a Zoom video presentation by Steve Clubbing, Managing Threats of Invasive Plants in Livestock Pastures. Missouri Prairie Foundation technical advisor and cattle producer Steve Clubbing is an expert on establishing native pastures to benefit cattle, wildlife, water quality, and more. Learn from Steve how to manage invasive plants in pastures. Registration is required. Go to Deep Roots KC. A list of services, meals, and hotlines are available at lawrenceprogressivecalendar.blogspot.com. That's updated daily. Remember, parks and trails will be open for hiking, walking, and biking. Stay well and be safe. Please listen to Eco Radio KC next week. Host Brent Ragsdale will play his recording of a presentation by Haskell Indian College professor Dan Wildcat about Native perspective on environmental stewardship. These items and more can be viewed at the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. We want to thank our engineer today, Dave Bennett Freeling. Stay tuned now for Fiesta Musical.
How thunderstorms can make your allergies worse. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Two dams failed in Michigan last week after torrential rains caused the Tittabawassee River to reach its highest level ever recorded, a foot above the previous record.
The Edenville Dam collapsed, causing the Smallwood Lake Dam downstream to be overwhelmed, inundating Midland, a city of 40,000.
The disaster put the spotlight on aging dams across the country and how climate change could lead to their failure if improvements aren't made.
Weather Underground reports that both of the dams, built in 1925 and owned by Boyce Hydropower, were rated as being high hazards, meaning that the loss of human life was likely should the structures fail.
Last November, the Associated Press released an analysis showing that nearly 1,700 dams in the U.S. were rated as high hazard and were in poor or unsatisfactory condition.
In 2018, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission revoked the license of the Edenville Dam, but didn't require the private owner to make improvements.
The floodwaters threatened Dow Chemical's facility and Superfund sites downriver. The New York Times reports that the inundation could erase the progress that has been made cleaning up the river by stirring up contamination and spreading it downstream.
Central Michigan has seen a dramatic rise in precipitation over the last century, which is consistent with predictions that human-produced climate change will increase rainfall in the mid-latitudes of the Earth, including the upper Midwest.
Trees offer many benefits in urban areas, such as improving air quality and keeping cities cooler. But tree canopies are declining, and one of the culprits is leaky natural gas pipelines.
A study conducted by the Boston University School of Public Health found that in one Massachusetts community, dead or dying trees along sidewalks were 30 times more likely to have been exposed to methane in the soil than healthy trees.
The researchers think that the gas had leaked from pipelines that are buried beneath adjacent roads because they found elevated concentrations of methane in the dirt between the trees and the street.
Inside Climate News reports that methane, the primary component of natural gas, is about 80 times more potent in warming the atmosphere than carbon dioxide over a 20-year period, which makes plugging even small gas leaks important.
Bumblebees rely heavily on pollen for essential nutrients as they build their summer colonies. But what do they do when there's a shortage of pollen?
Researchers have discovered that they puncture leaves with their mouth parts, which has the effect of forcing plants to bloom on average 30 days earlier.
One of the scientists involved in the study told Scientific American that they were observing bumblebees in an unrelated experiment and noticed the insects were damaging plant leaves.
The researchers knew that stress could cause a plant to flower, so they wondered whether the bees might be creating the blooms.
So they put pollen-deprived bumblebees in with mustard and tomato plants, and the bees soon cut holes in the leaves of each.
The researchers tried to reproduce the same type of damage using forceps and a razor, but the plants punctured by bees flowered weeks earlier, which suggests that there might be important chemicals in the insect's saliva.
The bees that puncture plants do not live long enough to benefit from their efforts. Future studies will likely look at how the bumblebee behavior evolved and whether other species do the same.
Speaking of pollen, people with hay fever might look forward to rainstorms, thinking that the allergen will be washed out of the air, but that's not what happens.
Researchers at the University of Iowa have determined that bits of pollen remain in the air after a storm for up to 11 hours.
Pollen grains are tough, but can rupture when exposed to high humidity, like during a rainstorm. The storm's winds lift grains into the clouds until falling rain sends fragments back toward the ground.
Those fragments are extremely small and don't settle on the surface, but can remain aloft and potentially get into people's lungs. The researchers found that there was a significant increase in pollen fragments after it rains heavily and recommend that people who have allergies stay indoors, especially after a thunderstorm.
And finally, international borders are often designated by lines drawn on a map, or they can follow natural features like mountains, rivers, or lakes. But what happens when they're delineated by a glacier that's melting because of global warming?
That's the situation that Refugio Guide del Cervino finds itself. The mountain restaurant was built high in the Italian Alps, but now might be in Switzerland.
In 2009, Italy and Switzerland agreed to a moving border in recognition of melting glaciers. GPS units were installed along the glacier and watershed to track any shifts.
The glacier has receded enough in the past 15 years that the restaurant may now be in Swiss territory. And as Glacier Hub reports, that could be a huge headache for its owner, Lucio Trucco, who would suddenly be subject to Swiss taxes and potentially even duties for every box of pasta brought to the restaurant from Italy.
And as the World Economic Forum writes, it could also mean that the restaurant would need to switch electrical outlets to meet Swiss codes. Trucco disputes the new border, saying the building hasn't moved an inch and is still in Italy.
Shifting borders may be an unanticipated consequence of climate change and a possible source of conflict or peace. India and Bangladesh disputed control over an uninhabited sandbar that might have had oil and gas reserves, but rising seas made the island and the problem disappear.
However, shrinking glaciers that supply fresh water in the province of Kashmir, long a point of contention between Pakistan and India, could make a tense situation worse if they disagree about who owns them.
That's it for this week in water. We'll see you next time.
It's time for Retro Red Eye Express. Retro Red Eye Express.